made me say so hot right now.
Tan caliente ahora!
Your weekly dose of arts and culture.
And all of that sort of stuff.
It's that weird thing that they're classics because they're classics because they're classics, and then they become the classics and everyone wants to do the classics because they're classics.
He's amazing.
Well, you need a lot of room for all that blood.
And he's hot as a firecracker.
You're listening to So Hot Right Now. You better not use me saying that.
Amazing babes.
On 2SER 107.3.
Good morning and welcome to So Hot Right Now, your weekly dose of all things arts and culture. And before I get started, I would like to acknowledge the Gadigal people who are the traditional custodians of this land from which we are broadcasting. I would also like to pay my respects to elders past, present and emerging of the Eora Nation. So my name is Nicole Beck, and if you can't recognize my voice, I have had a few weeks off from both fun things and illness, but it's good to be back and back for a really great show today. There are a lot of different things that we are talking about. We are chatting about Hairworm, which is at the old 505. It's a fresh femmes work. I will be joined by the writer and director of that show. Later on, we'll also be talking about All the Time in the World, which is an exhibition opening soon at Artspace, which explores time in a few different lenses, kind of thinking about the pressures of holding your breath and how that incites fear and how that slows down time, which is a really interesting concept I'm looking forward to exploring with the curators a little bit later on. But first up, we are talking about Queer Tour, which is a UTS art program that presents the UTS campus through a very personal, idiosyncratic, and ultimately queer lens. So stay with us because that is coming up around the corner. To get us there, this is a new one off Sampa the Great's new album, The Return. This is Diamond in the Rough. You are tuned into So Hot Right Now.
I think yo, I think yo. Yo, I think yo, I think you're good.
Church, good God, diamond in the rough. Wonder why they spit it looking shinier and lush. Spit shine, vibier with time. Knew it was a matter of course, they all force. Like most, like you when you're lost. Now they shy iron when you speedy on your growth. I expect the most. That's within the politics and looking like a boss. Doors, you open the doors. Only if the body walking openly is yours. Lost, remember the course. Boy Scout cookies while I'm queening in my sauce. Of course, you're like at a loss. Passion I ain't packing, I'm a vacuum for the cause. Force, I was never yours. Let me elevate, cause truly who is better, who is better? Chocolate on your box, green seasoning intended. Not fine, I'm already shining. Dripping in position, tell me who is better, who is better? Sammy, all up on your Grammy. Looking for my circle so they find a way to add me. Small family, they can't even stand me. Blood street dripping, say we sipping golden family. Truly, how you try to do me? Screw me to the industry and how you tryna do me? Not tripping, looking how I'm living. In the pieces, stripping, tell me who is better, who is better.
I feel no pressure, shiny.
face like a slushy place. Safe devil done touched me. Met him on a highway to feed him. Said this world's ugly. Made in his image and Garden of Eden. The naked truth of the spiritual war. Demons took despicable fallen men with backs on the wall. My black souls a black gold that can't be sold. A perfect stone. I was born with no price tag. Carried along in a weather storm. Still strong. A soldier on some guard mode. Now do your research. I do a work like an eternal melody. When the beats on church drums got me perfecting. Hallelujah. I've been a Buddha in the midst of black Jesus resurrecting. Success ladder. We move up even though shackled and skin prison. We got weapons like the music. So let's begin singing songs of freedom till the end. And it goes, get me out of your heart. Full of hate. I cannot stand. Just let me play my part. If I ain't black, I'm another man. So do you understand what it takes to walk in my shoes? My physical vehicle on the news. Away from today. I still don't lose. We'll keep the essence linked up with Sampa the Great to give him the message. So instead of crack epidemic, excellent blacks representing what a
action these school holidays with the National Institute of Dramatic Art. NIDA Open offers holiday short courses for all ages across multiple Sydney locations. Choose from acting, directing, musical theatre, TV presenting, writing and more. Nurture your creativity this spring with NIDA. Book your spring holiday course at open.nida.edu.au. NIDA sponsors 2SER 107.3.
Picture of where I fit in.
there is a track from Sui Zhen out of Melbourne that is I Could Be There. You are tuned into So Hot Right Now, your weekly dose of arts and culture. And if you are familiar with the UTS campus, you'll know what building is what is studied within its walls, and what food you might find inside. However, this Tuesday, UTS Art presents us with a tour of the campus that extends beyond the obvious, re-examining our relationships to spaces and architecture. Presented by the UTS Queer Collective and artist Sarah Rodigari, Queer Tour draws on a portrait of the uni that is intimately illustrated by its staff and students, their knowledge and lived experience. I'm joined by artist Sarah Rodigari and Alice McAuliffe from UTS Art to tell us a little bit more about Queer Tour. Good morning.
Good morning.
So Alice, you are the curator of UTS Art Live. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you guys program?
Sure. Look, UTS Art Live started around 2 years ago, and it's a program that invites artists to work with students on campus and to work collaboratively to develop and produce temporal public artworks on campus. So they're event-based, they can last from 20 minutes to 4 hours, but it's really the development stage I think is the most important. That's sort of about a 5 to 6 week period where the artists will work closely with a group of students to develop up a project.
Great. And so on that note, you mentioned collaboration. With the development of Queer Tour, I know that there was a few different parties involved, students as well as artists like yourself, Sarah. Can you tell us a little bit about how this collaboration all worked?
Well, we work with the Centre for Social Justice and Inclusion, and they have a LGBTQI plus officer who I sort of talk with about the programming and what we're going to be doing in that sense. And we did this project actually 2 years ago. We did a queer tour and it was so interesting and successful, and a lot of people were really affected by it, academic staff, professional staff and students, that we wanted to run it again in a new rendition. So we asked Sarah to come back again, work with the Queer Collective again, but a different group of students. But we also this time invited Sarah to work with five academics from UTS that are all studying queer theory, but across so many different areas, from sexual development to user experience online, architecture. So it was a way of allowing Sarah to be informed by the research at UTS, develop up a program, and then collaborate with the students in light of that research that she did.
So this is a question for perhaps both of you, Sarah and Alice. Why a tour? Because obviously you could explore, you know, queer theory and its relationship to a university in a variety of ways. But what is unique about a tour, and how does that bring about different things to a regular program?
That is a really good question, which I'm not sure. I think tour is being used in a kind of larger kind of umbrella term for thinking about a relationship to space, both kind of architectural and perhaps emotional space, but a kind of method that I use in thinking about my practice is kind of very conversational. And so when I meet with academics and with the Queer Collective, I try to meet not in kind of architectural spaces of like a classroom, an office, or even a gallery. So kind of trying to shift that hierarchical structure. So walking is a really nice way of getting into a conversation with someone without necessarily having to make eye contact or feel like you have to take some kind of authoritative position. And so the research kind of starts out through us walking together and just talking about how we navigate and negotiate space. And that's been quite a significant conversation, especially with the changes around UTS and all the new buildings. And navigating the new buildings, a kind of fascinating way of walking from one building to another without necessarily even having to get onto street level.
I'm interested in what the Queer Collective in particular brought to that kind of conversation, being students at the university, and what kind of voice that represents, like how that manifests.
So what do they bring? So really, they have a very different understanding and relationship to what I do, and it's really about this process of slowing down. And we're working in two particular buildings, the tower and building two, which is just opened. So and it's about them considering how they occupy that space physically but emotionally. And so what aspects of the spaces that they're drawn to, what do they do in public space, how do they navigate eye contact, how do they sit, those kind of relationships. But I think they kind of speak about it in a very different way to how I might imagine it, because there's a generational shift between, queerness in public space. Like, it's a very different culture.
I think also something I wanted to say, just to add to that, was that part of the program at UTS Art Live is to think about how we create collaborative spaces and to break down hierarchies, as Sarah talked about before. And so we try different methodologies to sort of do that. One is the walking and different things. But also I think when we bring two groups together to collaborate, we need to think about what voices and what expertise they're bringing. And I think that's a really important part of it, that Sarah brings her expertise as an artist in professional practice. But these students bring their expertise of being queer students on campus. And that creates not a total, we can never create a level playing field between the two, but it allows Sarah and this group of students to really exchange and interchange without Sarah being sort of more informed than them. They bring their own expertise to the whole experience.
I'm also particularly interested, and it's come up in a few different conversations we've had, in the idea of hierarchy and how that kind of intersects with architecture, because in many ways, major institutions, particularly universities, can be symbols of like exclusion or prestige and that kind of thing. And I wanted to know how that kind of is reflected in the program, particularly from a queer perspective.
I have,
sorry, that was loaded.
I know. So maybe if I think about hierarchy, so... one way of breaking down the hierarchy is how we've worked together. So I put the proposal of like this idea of a queer tour. What that means is very much determined by the collective and how they want to engage with it and what they want to bring. So I'm working with four people from the collective. I put proposals forward and they respond to them. And, you know, I might be really into, like, I'm totally obsessed with this idea of... I guess, intimacy and eye contact. And they can, like, I can say that, like, 5 weeks in a row. And whether or not they're interested in that is a whole other conversation. So they take that or they leave it. So, or I'm really obsessed with the UTS tower and the brutalist architecture, and that's not an aesthetic that they're interested in. Mm-hmm. So it's, like, really about relationships of what, how do they want to share their experience of being queer on campus. And that's really different for me coming from a culture of the arts, which is, like, predominantly, it feels predominantly queer, or you would assume queerness, I think, well, I do. And then if you're working in science or if you're studying science, it's a completely different relationship. And I think that's been the most significant realization, I think, for all of us, like all these different assumptions of what queerness is, what does it mean to be queer at uni, how do you engage with your teachers? Like, the, I think, you know, 2 years ago, the collective kept talking about how there was no queer presence in academic staff, and I was like, oh, everyone I know. I was like, what? And so that's you know, a significant shift for me to then realize how I present myself when I'm teaching, but also then that prompted a shift to then work with academics to think around what is a queer space on campus.
Doing this project 2 years on from the first queer tour, have the changes been obvious in terms of those kinds of things or what the collective has brought to the project?
It's a completely different group, completely different generation. It's post marriage equality, and it's also, there's been a shift with like gender neutral bathrooms that have been introduced into UTS, but it's raised questions of like, are all the bathrooms gender neutral? Are all the bathrooms accessible? Where are they? So it raises different questions and different relationships that I think have become increasingly about, for me, interpersonal relations and values and how we spend time together. And that becomes increasingly, I think, as you've got like, I guess as you're moving through like two or three different architectural structures within like a day, if you're moving from class to class across buildings, you're constantly walking this path and bumping up against people, and it's very rare that you make eye contact or you sit down and spend time with each other. And I mean, that sounds a bit daggy. I'm not like, we're not having cups of tea, although I've suggested that. That was kind of thrown out. but like, it is something about spending time and creating space for friendships, which I think is what happens in the queer collective space, which I've never been to. They've actually, if they're listening, I've never been invited into the new queer space.
Something that kind of comes up a lot in what you're saying is this idea of intimacy and, yeah, creating that kind of sense of comfort. Is that something you hope the tour does?
No, not necessarily. So yeah. I think the tour is, it has a lot of There's a lot of vulnerability in it. There's a lot of uncertainty. It's an unraveling of what is this experience. And I think fundamentally an experience of being different or non-normative. And that's not just about gender and sexuality, that, you know, expands on multiple levels, is something about being uncomfortable and uncertain. And I think there's an experience for the audience of that discomfort and uncertainty, but hopefully that's a platform to step off and embrace. It's also very warm, and I think there's friendship and intimacy there. And but I think there's it's awkward and intentionally so. It's like not polished. It's not theatre. It's not framing an aesthetic structure. It is very much about the awkwardness of developing friendships over a 5-week period, and what the awkwardness is of figuring out yourself in relation to a normative structure.
Great. That's a great place to finish, I think. Okay. A wonderful summary. That was artist Sarah Rodigeri and curator Alice Mikoloff speaking about UTS Arts Queer Tour. This is happening on October 1st. There's two tours, one from 1 to 2 p.m. and one from 6 to 7 p.m. And booking is essential, so we'll chuck the links up to that online. And also, if you want to get more involved in what UTS Art has to offer, just check out art.uts.edu.au for more information. There's a huge ton of public programs to check out, and you can find them all there. I'm going to kick on with a little bit more music. This one is from Nao off her first album. This is Fool to Love. You are tuned into So Hot right now.
I was a fool to love. 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 I was a fool to love.
Hey, lonely. Sorry, but I'm leading you, my friend. Don't hold me on my back and teasing me again. It rains on
Spring is here, and Sydney Fringe Festival is in full swing. This year, Fringe comes to the CBD as we take over the City Tattersalls Club and the Rocks throughout September, along with an enormous program spread right across Greater Sydney. Immerse yourself in 30 days of theatre, comedy, circus, live music, dance, food, and lots more. Celebrate some of the best independent live performance this city has to offer. Book your tickets at sydneyfringe.com today. 2SER is a media partner of Sydney Fringe.
You are tuned into So Hot right now on 2SER 107.3 FM, which is your weekly dose of arts and culture with myself, Nicole Beck. If you missed my last chat, I was talking about Queer Tour, which is from UTS Art Live's program. You can listen back to that chat on our show page if you look for So Hot right now on the 2SER website. So on average, we take 16 breaths per minute, 960 breaths an hour, 23,040 breaths a day, 8,409,600 a year. And if we live to 80, we will take about 672,768,000,000 breaths in a lifetime. I may have messed that one up, but you get the point. There's a lot. And yet time feels infinitely longer when you hold your breath. So up next, I'm chatting about an installation that explores the relationship between breath and time. So stay tuned. That is coming up right after this track. This is from Sydney-based artist Harley Mavis. This is No Chance. You are tuned into So Hot right now.
I didn't take the time to make sure you were mine. I kept thinking I had time, and oh, how wrong I was. You were there in that emerald dress, singing like a bird, and God, it was the sweetest thing that I had ever heard.
Tell me what do you need? I'm begging you, baby, I can't
there is Sydney artist Harley Mavis with her track No Chance. You are tuned into So Hot Right Now, your weekly dose of arts and culture. And right now I am talking about time and breath. So how does time slow down? How does time slow down and breathing changes? Installation All the Time in the World considers live timed and it's at its extreme, exploring our relationship to water that is both terrifying and compelling. Focusing on people's ability to hold their breath for extended periods, the work explores how fear gives way to a different experience of time over the duration of breath holds. How can we understand about what can we understand about our most fundamental action from such an extreme experience? There is a lot going on in this installation All the Time in the World. So thankfully, I am joined by Anna Munster and Michelle Baker, who will unpack these concepts in a little bit more detail. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, let's start from the very beginning, I think. So central to All the Time in the World is obviously time, and it's specifically the relations between measured and lived time. So can you explain a little bit more about this oscillation?
Okay, so, you know, we get up in the morning, it's the alarm rings, it's time to get up, time to go to work, and we've only got 5 minutes, we've got to rush through the city, we've got to move according to clock time, yep. So that's the idea of measured time. And we're interested in exploring what it actually feels like when time gets altered. So, for example, when you go underwater, when you go under a wave, perhaps even when you just get into the bath and you put your head under the water, something changes. And it's not like some sort of mind-altering experience. It's just like you feel like all things are shifting, things are changing. So we found people who actually explore that in extreme situations, perhaps by going under ice or going under big waves. And that's how the whole thing started.
I'm interested in how to experience this, it's kind of inextricably connected to water. What is it about water that slows down time?
We do have quite a sort of fixation on water, I have to admit. Look, it comes from a lot of different sort of perspectives, but primarily for both Anna and myself, we spend a lot of time around the water, so it sort of became an interest. And then for me, it became sort of more like an obsession because I surf, I spend a lot of time there. And so we started to think about the kind of effects that water has. And like Anna was sort of saying about even just that feeling of like, you know, going under a wave sort of changes your senses. And so with the new work, one of the pieces that's in the show Hold, we started to explore how time feels different or differently when you hold your breath, but this time from the position that when you don't have a choice but to hold your breath. So I started to think about, you know, when I'm sort of held under a wave, it's like, and like many people who surf or spend a lot of time in the water, it becomes a kind of a stressful situation where you go, I can't breathe. And so it then became a sort of a exploration of, well, why are we so concerned about that? And starting to then delve into talking to people who understand and know what a breath hold is, you know, from a much more kind of professional experience, you know, sort of position, like, you know, free divers and big wave surfers, and then just bringing that back to water as a kind of, as a vehicle, I guess, for exploring, you know, a kind of a feeling and a sensation.
So from speaking to people who have a different perspective, like people, free divers and such, what kind of did you learn? Did your perspective on holding your breath change?
Absolutely. So I spent a few months traveling around, interviewing a range of basically, you know, world champion free divers and big wave surfers, and asked them about their experiences with breath holding, and that they train for this, you know, obviously massively. And I also started to do some courses myself, so I, you know, I got thrown around pools and learned how to free dive. And I realised that from talking to them and then actually going and doing it, that it's amazing, not just physically but psychologically, the kind of the space that you have to put yourself in. It's absolutely about slowing everything down to a point where you just simply can't think about what happened before and what's happening next. It's about this absolute moment. I mean, if anything, it sounds like mindfulness meditation, really. But unless you do that, and I realized when I tried to do it myself, unless you put yourself in that situation, you do start to panic. You think, I'm not going to come out of this moment. And so I learned a lot from these people about how to approach something, not just physically, but in my own sort of headspace. And that's, I think, what we try to then bring into the actual work itself.
And I think that's prevalent when looking at the work Hold that you just mentioned, which is features very slow underwater footage. I'm interested to know kind of what the affect is of that, watching that, because clearly kind of the emotional side of things from your experience is quite central to all the time in the world.
Yeah. I mean, look, you know, you can't predict how an audience is going to interact, but what we try to do is we try to create a space which, even though it feels like very immersive, like you might be inside a wave or underwater, it doesn't feel frightening. So I particularly also work with the sound elements so that the space actually feels like that very kind of expanded, echoey, reverberant sort of feeling that you get when you're listening underwater or something like that. So it actually feels like a space in which you're held. So that's also partly why we called it Hold. So it feels like a space which where your mind stops being governed by measurement and by thinking, oh, what do I do? Where do I go? What, you know? And it just feels like I can actually just be here and just feel like a sensing body.
Yeah. Interestingly, curatorially, it almost seems like you've constructed a kind of sanctuary or something.
Yeah, maybe that's
like
a way
an escape
to think about
from
it. Yeah.
The measurement of time, which
is
interesting. Along with Hold, can you tell us about Soto and what else is featured in All the Time in the World?
I'll give that to you.
Okay. the Soto piece is it's a kind of window installation that we're doing at ArtSpace, and we work with LED rope lighting and starting to play on the kind of the physical notion of hold that operates, particularly when you free dive. You have these lines that go down, you know, and they can, if you're a really good free diver, they can go down 100 meters, and that line becomes your, in a way, your lifeline, in that it guides you through a space. And when I was learning to free dive, just seeing that line in front of me was the kind of, I guess it was my sign of going, okay, I'm on the right track. I'm not heading off horizontally or vertically, because you have no sense of what's up and what's down. And if you're swimming across, you once you reach a certain point, these things just get lost. So we thought that would be a kind of a nice sort of gentle introduction into the work, sort of playing on this just in a kind of, you know, I think just a more sort of, not a literal way, but a kind of quite sort of creative way to sort of gently ease people in and, I guess, guide them in a way.
So that piece is actually facing out to the street. So it'll be LED lights against a kind of like blue, kind of infinite blue space. And they're just sort of drops of the LED rope lighting, which are held in place by these discs that resemble the kind of discs that are the weights that are used in freediving. So, you know, it's more like a kind of a sort of a lure to get people in, and also something to do with the windows at night as well, so people can continue to enjoy artwork as they walk past in the middle of the night, I guess.
Great. And just one last question. So obviously this exhibition is, in a way, challenging a lot of conventional norms and such. How are you hoping, in an ideal world, people interact, or what would you like people to take away from the experience?
Look, the way that we're setting up the space, sort of going back to what Anna was saying, it's around creating a very sort of calming environment, and we're constructing the space in this kind of quite cocoon-like way. And you know, again, going back to the training that I had to do, you almost feel like water hugs you, and that's part of what relaxes you when you do things like free diving. And so what we want when people go into it is to actually just to slow and listen. They'll hear kind of snippets of the interviews, but they'll see this, you know, extraordinary footage that's just, it's so slow. And I think we want them to not feel that it has to be a terrifying thing to hold your breath. It's like, it's kind of cool and it can be quite
empowering.
Nice.
Exactly. Yeah. But also I think the other part of the soundscape is that I recorded a really fantastic Sydney singer, Nadia Piave, doing some very kind of old early music, but I've rearranged it so it's, you know, you couldn't really tell exactly what the time of the piece is. So for people to actually, you know, have all their senses opened up, like their listening senses, their kind of feeling senses, their visual senses, but not in a way that's kind of like hitting you, more in a way that's like exploratory and just kind of like expansive. Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, thank you both so much for joining me on the show this morning.
Thanks for having us.
No worries. That was Anna Munster and Michelle Barker from Artspace's new exhibition, All the Time in the World, which is showing from October 4th until the 27th. We'll put all the details up on our show page so you can find a little bit more information about that. And now I'm going to play a little bit of a teaser. This is from Hold. It'll give you a bit of an idea of the soundscapes created at the exhibition. You are tuned into So Hot right now.
I could go under the water. Water's my primary element.
It's very quiet underwater.
Washing away everything.
I was always holding my breath and I was always in the water.
The moment I go under water, it's almost like it feels like I'm home.
I always go and seek out the water. No hiding. I could go under the water.
It's very quiet underwater.
Alien environment.
Alien have no control over.
Living soldier, sunrise woken, blue lights on me, more than we smoking. Living soldier, you're a broken.
That one there is Bolivian Soldier, a new one from Ariel Pink. And you are tuned into So Hot Right Now with myself, Nicole Beck, for your weekly dose of arts and culture. So showing as part of Freshworks Femme at the old 505 Theatre, Hairworm is an exciting independent play that explores the journey of onset to recovery of living with an eating disorder. I'm joined right now in the studio by the director Jess Davis and writer Emma Wright, who are here to tell us a little bit more about Hairworm. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Hello.
So I'm really interested in Hairworm as a title. That might be a good place to start. What's that all about?
Sure. Look, I was just thinking about that now, really. Where did Hairworm come from? I think it came from some Googling. I really wanted an accessible metaphor to talk about eating disorders, particularly about anorexia nervosa. And I think I was just looking at parasites, because the idea of an eating disorder being parasitic was something that was kind of a strong thing for me to start writing. And so I was looking through these parasites and I came across the Spinocordotis telinii. And it's this really crazy parasite that it's this hairworm which grasshoppers and crickets ingest, and it sort of grows inside them to the point that it's fully grown and matured, and it overtakes the insect. It sort of releases these chemicals and proteins and overtakes the insect, so that when it comes across water, it makes the insect dive in and essentially commit suicide, so that it can then sort of weave itself out and continue the cycle. So
wow.
It's actually very fitting.
It's crazy to watch.
You can watch it on YouTube. And
I'm scared.
Yeah, it's a little bit scary. It's fascinating. It's crazy. Nature
surreal.
Is crazy. But that just sort of seems like a perfect way to describe to someone who perhaps doesn't have any experience or understanding of what an eating disorder really is, to say, hey, okay, how about we take it out of something that's kind of personal and taboo and icky and put it into something that maybe people will understand? And that's sort of where it came from.
Yeah, the physicalization of something, of building an image for something that can be invisible, mm-hmm. In terms of mentally. And it's a really strong metaphor in the play. It's really apt.
Yeah, great. So this story obviously is kind of delving into some invisible aspects of mental illness or like human life more generally. What inspired you to tell this story, Hairworm?
It's been a story that I've been working on for 7 years.
Whoa.
So a long, long time. It began as a short story when I was in year 10, which I then revisited when I was at uni. And then I started turning into a play in 2015, kind of accidentally. So I was about 15 when I started writing it. And it was just because I was really passionate, and I still am, about breaking the stigma that surrounds eating disorders. I just think that it's something that no one's talking about. And if we look at the research, one of the main obstacles towards individuals seeking recovery is the fact that there is very little awareness around eating disorders. I did a speech in year 10, where I talked about eating disorders being such a problem in society, and we can't go on like this. And the feedback to that speech was, I think that you're manipulating the topic to suit your standpoint, and that's not actually, like, they basically said that that eating disorders were not like a valid thing to be talking about in that context. And I face that so regularly, where people just, they don't think they're an actual thing. They think it's attention seeking. They think it's vanity. It's a phase.
It comes with a certain image,
yeah,
as well. When I think just generally there's this image of anorexia and eating disorders, particularly food restricting eating disorders, that the sufferers are young, female, white,
middle class,
yeah. which is kind of the poster girl image of it. Mm-hmm. But the actual truth is that it doesn't discriminate.
Yeah.
There are many men that also suffer from eating disorders, which is a part of eating disorders that is not touched on as often. obviously our show is part of Femme Freshworks and we're working with a big ensemble of femme performers and creatives, but it would be remiss of us not to acknowledge that it doesn't discriminate. It is not just a female problem.
I think it's particularly interesting as well that this issue prevails in a time where the notion of therapy and mental illness is becoming increasingly destigmatized, but it definitely seems a little bit more biased towards anxiety and depression, yeah. And eating disorders are definitely overlooked and misunderstood in a lot of ways. So, yeah, it's great to shed some light on the issues. So speaking back to the show in a little bit more detail, who's the protagonist? Can you tell us a little bit more about the narrative without giving too much away?
Oh, so it's a very interesting work. It's been an amazing challenge to work on it. So I've had it in my hot little hands for 2 years and seen various iterations of it as it's developed through reads. And the first time we did it with a cast of 7 as a read. And then we did it with a cast of 3, and now we have a cast of 9. So there are no delineations to the script. That's something that comes down to the individual part of the production that we're doing. But there is a very central character that exists, and it is a young female voice we go from the onset of the disorder into their darkest times, and then what it is like to come out at the other side but never being fully recovered, because I think there's a lot of things that you can never fully recover because they always sit with you, and the intricacies of negotiating the world when people don't fully understand what you've been through.
Yeah, I definitely think that sounds wonderful. Just one last question. So obviously the work deals with a variety of kind of challenging things that may be alien to some and resonate really well for others. What do you hope people take away from the show in an ideal world?
In an ideal world, I think Jess has phrased it really beautifully in the past. This isn't a show solely for people who have experienced an eating disorder or know someone who has, because let's be real, most of us know someone who has, even if we don't know it. I think it's a really crucial reminder to be kinder to ourselves, to be kinder to the people in our lives, to have empathy and compassion for people, and to be aware that there's always more going on with an individual than what meets the eye. And I really truly hope that people will walk away, hopefully removing some of those stereotypes of EDs that we are so commonly faced with, and just more, I guess, of an understanding of what it is like for an individual who's battling the condition, and an understanding of not only what that individual is going through, but what the people in their lives are going through as well. The play is quite heavily focused on the effects of an ED on the family unit, because that's also something that's not often talked about. We hear the perspective of the sufferer, but rarely their loved ones. And it's a huge part of the disorder. It really affects everyone in the picture, not just the one person.
And also, I'm also very excited for audiences to see our big female conglomerate. I don't know if that's
amazing.
The right word.
16 like women word. Brought this to the stage.
Incredible.
And our dramaturg.
And our dramaturg, Simon Thompson.
But yeah, from various backgrounds, experiences, personally and creatively, and they've just been an amazing team to work with, and I'm very excited for all of their hard work to be put up for an audience opening on Tuesday.
Whoa. Great. Well, thank you both so much for joining me on the show today, and good luck with opening night and the run of the show.
Thank you so much for having us.
No worries. That was Jess and Emma from what sounds like a new and powerful show, Hairworm, which is as part of Freshworks Femme at the Old 505 Theatre. It's opening on Tuesday, as they mentioned, and will close on October 5th, and we'll put all the links and details to tickets up on our show page if you look for So Hot Right Now on the 2SER website or Instagram, which is So Hot Right Now. 107.3 FM. Anyway, so that's almost about all the time I have for the show today. Just a reminder that today is also the 40th anniversary pop-up archiving day for 2SER, because our 40th is coming up. So if you're a passionate fan of the station, get involved. That is happening at Studios 301 from 12 to 4 p.m. down in Alexandria. And if you miss anything that you would like to catch up on, again, head to our show page, give us a like, etc. And other than that, I hope that everyone has a wonderful weekend, and I will see you all next week. I'm going to finish on a bit of a fun one. This is Perko with Rounded. This has been So Hot Right Now.